Highland Falls, El Paso, Clarksville, Watertown, and from other important military capitals around the globe, Eye on Defense brings the top military and defense issues into focus. Eye on Defense is proudly sponsored by Big Sarge Pre-Owned TA-50 Emporium and The Last Hope Jewelry and Pawn. And now, citizens of Earth, brace yourselves for the next episode of Eye on Defense. Defense, 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 defense.
All right. Excuse me. We're back, everybody. This is episode 257. This is 15 April. I don't know, like 10 stories. Might go longer than 30. I'm not sure. We'll start off with kind of a follow-up of the Israel attack from Iran on Saturday. We'll start with Twitter. CENTCOM X, 13 April in the morning, 14 April, U.S. CENTCOM forces supported by U.S. European Command destroyers successfully engaged and destroyed more than 80 one-way attack uncrewed aerial vehicles and at least six ballistic missiles intended to strike Israel from Iran and Yemen. This includes a ballistic missile on the launcher vehicle and seven UAVs destroyed on the ground in Iranian-backed Houthi-controlled areas of Yemen prior to their launch. So that's CENTCOM X. And then we'll go to Times of Israel, a couple of stories, and then we'll go to Jerusalem Post. Real short stories here. Prime Minister said to assure Likud ministers that Israel will respond to Iran, but wisely and not from the gut. This is from today, Times of Israel. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu told Likud, L-I-K-U-D, ministers during a private meeting earlier today that Israel will respond to Iran's weekend attack, but it must do so wisely and not from the gut, according to Khan Public Broadcaster. He said, Prime Minister Netanyahu said, Iran should have to wait nervously, not knowing when the attack might come, just as it made Israel do the same, Netanyahu reportedly told the Likud ministers. A senior Israeli official tells Khan that Israel will respond to Iran and that it is only a question of when and where. The network says Israel is committed to updating the United States ahead of any strike in order to provide time for American troops in the region to prepare for Iranian retaliation. The commitment came following anger in Washington that Jerusalem did not give it a proper heads up before striking a consular annex in Iran's embassy in Damascus, killing several IRGC generals. Next, from Reuters via Times of Israel, today, IAEA chief worried Israel might hit Iranian nuclear sites, kept inspectors home on Monday, today, from Reuters via Times of Israel. The head of the UN nuclear watchdog said he is concerned about Israel possibly targeting Iranian nuclear facilities, but that the International Atomic Energy Agency inspections of Iranian facilities will resume on Tuesday, tomorrow. Iran closed its nuclear facilities on Sunday over, quote, security considerations. IAEA Director General Rafael Grossi says while they reopened on Monday, he kept inspectors away until we see that the situation is completely calm. Director General says we are going to resume tomorrow. This has not had an impact on our inspection activity. Asked about the possibility of an Israeli strike on Iranian nuclear facilities, Grossi said we are always concerned about this possibility, and he urges extreme restraint. Water. Sorry about that. Next. Jerusalem Post. Today, from the staff, Yonah Jeremy Bob, who does a lot of the military stuff, and Tova Lazaroff, 15 April, Netanyahu asked IDF to provide target options for Iranian attack. That's from a report. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has reportedly asked the IDF for potential target options for an Israeli attack on Iran. This is according to the Washington Post on Monday, citing Israeli sources. According to the report, the targets include an Iranian facility in Tehran or a cyber attack. On Monday, the Jerusalem Post, today, Monday, reported that within the corridors of Israel's power, a critical internal debate rages on concerning the timing and manner of a response due to recent Iranian aggressions. Israeli leaders are caught in a strategic bind, balancing the urgency of immediate action to restore deterrence with the risk of escalating to a broader conflict. Amid this backdrop, Prime Minister Netanyahu, alongside key figures like Defense Minister Gallant and IDF Chief of Staff Major General Halavi deliberated on the optimal strategy to counter Tehran's bold maneuvers. Some advocated for swift action to signal strength, while others urged patience, suggesting that waiting might draw further international support or even create more strategic advantages. I'll stop right there. Got a couple more on Iran and Israel. One, two, three more, actually. A lot of news on that. This is from Defense Post, Defense News via Associated Press, all the U.S. assets that helped repel Iran's attack on Israel 15 April. Today, a host of American ships, jets, and munitions played a vital role in repelling Iran's attack over Israel this weekend, which was an unprecedented barrage of hundreds of missiles and attack drones, which we know that. We know the attack was on Saturday. It was marked the first time that Iran has ever launched a direct military assault on Israel. Israeli military spokesman said 99% of the drones and missiles launched by Iran were intercepted. A part of that success rate has to do with U.S. forces who aided Israelis in taking out airborne threats. We already kind of gave you the CENTCOM tweet, X, or whatever it's called. From the Mediterranean Sea, Navy destroyers Carney and Arleigh Burke shot down multiple ballistic missiles in the attack, according to defense official media reports. Meanwhile, the White House officials confirmed that the U.S. Air Force's 494 and 355 fighter squadrons also played a role in Israel's defense, racking up dozens of aerial takedowns. A Patriot missile defense battery based in Erbil, Iraq, also shot down Iranian weapons, officials told journalists. This weekend's attack not only came from Iranian territory, but also from proxies in Iraq, Syria, and Yemen, officials said. Short article. And then here's a good one from USNI. SAM Lagrone 15 April, SM-3 ballistic missile interceptor used for the first time in combat, officials confirm. For the first time in combat, guided missile destroyers fired missiles developed to intercept ballistic missiles during a U.S. response to the Iranian attack, USNI News has learned. The USS Arleigh Burke, DDG-51, USS Kearney, DDG-64, which is what I like about USNI News. They always name the ship in full. And in the Eastern Mediterranean, fired 4 to 7 standard missile threes to intercept Iranian ballistic missiles headed toward Israel. This is from two defense officials confirmed to USNI News on Monday. The USS Kearney and USS Arleigh Burke have versions of the Aegis combat system that were modified to track and target ballistic missiles. The SPY-1D radar on these destroyers cues the SM-3 to attack the ballistic missile. The SM-3 transport a kill vehicle outside the atmosphere to intercept a ballistic missile near the height of its path from its launch point before it re-enters the atmosphere to hit the target. Both of these destroyers were placed off the coast of Israel as part of the defensive measures against an Iranian strike in retaliation for an Israeli attack on an Iranian embassy in Syria. How much more of this? A couple more paragraphs. It is unclear what missiles the Iranians fired toward Israel, but according to a missile analyst, Chris Carlson, the fact that the Navy uses SM-3s points to the likelihood that the Iranians use some of its medium-range ballistic missiles with a range of 1,800 miles. About the SM-3s, first deployed in 2004 on U.S. cruisers and destroyers, the SM-3s have been part of the ballistic missile defense network across the world. In 2011, the United States announced it would deploy 4 of these missile destroyers in Rota, Spain, as part of the European phased adaptive approach to ballistic missile defense, along with missile defense sites based on Aegis technology in Poland and Romania, and those also use SM-3s. The destroyer Burke is part of the U.S. destroyer contingent in Rota, and the USS Kearney has previously been stationed there as part of the mission. Likewise, ballistic missile defense destroyers and cruisers patrol near Japan and South Korea as a hedge against potential North Korean ballistic missile attacks. While the variants of the missile have been used for more than 2 decades, they have never been used in a real-world situation until over the weekend. How about that? Very good story by Sam Lagrone. Let's see, next. I think this is the last story for that. Yep, and then we got 2 for Ukraine. So the next one is Israeli F-35s were targeted in an Iranian barrage but survived unscathed. The IDF says, Seth Fronsman, 15 April, Iran may have targeted an Israeli airbase housing F-35 jets during its missile and drone attack, but few of the munitions made it to the target and none appear to have done significant damage. That's from IDF. On Sunday, the Iranian foreign minister said Tehran took aim at only military targets in its limited strike, including an Israeli facility that houses F-35 fighters, apparently in retaliation for the F-35's purported role in the domestic strike on 1 April. Here's that. A couple episodes ago, we quoted a Iranian army general, which we hardly haven't done. Usually it's the IRGC folks, but this was like a regular army general. He has another quote here. He says, Armed Forces Major General Mohammed Bagheri specifically said that Israel's Navatim Air Base in southern Israel was targeted, according to local media. So they actually named it by name, Navatim Air Base, southern Israel. But today, IDF said that though Navatim was indeed targeted, Iran failed to cause any major damage there on Saturday night. Emphasizing the point, the IDF released footage of an F-35 landing at Navatim just hours after the attack, and the IDF Chief of Staff, Halavi, I think it's Halavi, this guy says Haveli, Seth Fronsman, I think that's a typo. Anyway, where was I? Chief of Staff made a speech there with a pristine F-35 looming in the background today. Iran, here's a quote from, he says Haveli again. I could have swore it was Halavi. Stand by, you're going to have to bear with me. I'll make sure I'm not going crazy here. Halavi, right? Why is he saying Haveli? Anyway, moving on. Iran wanted to harm strategic capabilities in the state of Israel. This is something that did not happen in the past, Halavi said, Haveli, speaking to members of the IDF's 140, the squadron, which flies a fifth-generation fighter. But he said Iran had run up against, quote, Israel's air superiority. ABC News reported that a senior U.S. official said that Navatim was hit by 5 ballistic missiles, damaging a C-130 transport aircraft, an unused runway, and an empty storage facility. IDF spokesman Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari said that only 4 missiles hit the area. In all, Iran sent 350 threats toward Israel. U.S. says 99% were intercepted. We've heard that number a couple of times. The IDF said it deployed dozens of aircraft to intercept the incoming threats. Israel operates F-15s and F-16s. In addition, Israel has 39 F-35I Adair fighters out of 75 it has in order. So they call it the F-35, they call it the Adair, A-D-I-R, not the Lightning. There are several squadrons at Navatim Air Base. And I like the way the author named them, the 140th Golden Eagle Squadron, the 117th Training Squadron, and the 116th Lions of the South Squadron, which opened in 2020 as the second F-35 squadron. So I guess the 116th is the second, the 140th is the first, I'm assuming. Cool names for the squadrons, Golden Eagle and Lions of the South. All right, moving on. 2 stories from Ukraine. Actually, 3. What am I doing on time? 13 minutes? Yeah, I'm doing good. 2 from Kiev Post and 1 from Defense Post. Here's Kiev Post. Today, Ukraine's army chief, frontline operational situation deteriorated. We don't hear from General Sersky much. So if I hear something from General Sersky, I'll try to do it because he doesn't do a lot of interviews or doesn't say a lot. So, this is 15 April. The commander-in-chief of Armed Forces of Ukraine, AFU, General Sersky, Colonel General, I think is what he is. Anyway, I don't want to disrespect his rank. I'll just call him General Sersky. Said the frontline situation is deteriorating along the scarred frontier of the eastern part of the country. Russian forces are advancing toward Chasiv Yar, 9.3 miles west of the Donetsk town of Bakhmut, which was one of the big battles, I think, last May, that the Russians conquered last year, along a front line that spans 625 miles. General Sersky said this in a Facebook post yesterday, 14 April. Here it is, Colonel General. Yep, Colonel General Sersky warning comes as Ukraine's access to ammunition equipment from the West is dwindling. Chasif-Yar is a gateway to the more strategic important towns of that region. The city stands at an elevation of approximately 277 meters and is constantly being bombarded by Russian aviation and is currently a hotspot. This is the most pertinent battle in the Russian-Ukraine war. It's considered a litmus test for both sides. Here's a quote from General Sursky. The situation on the Eastern Front has escalated significantly in recent days. The enemy is actively attacking our positions in Lyman and Bakhmut, sectors with assault groups supported by armored vehicles. The Kremlin is taking advantage of Ukraine's material with an E, shortages, and continues to advance along the front. Should Chasif-Yar fall, the remainder of Kiev-controlled Donetsk Oblast will be vulnerable and signals victories dated to 2014 when the Russian invasion was launched. Last quote from General Sursky, in order to respond adequately to the actions of the enemy and strengthen the defense of our troops in this direction, measures were taken to significantly strengthen the brigades with ammunition, drones, and EW devices. Quote from General Sursky. Next story from Kiev Post. Russia forms new North military group in regions bordering Ukraine. Kiev Post, 15 April, today. Russian Ministry of Defense mentioned the existence of a SEVER, S-E-V-E-R, meaning North in Russian, operational strategic group for the first time in its daily updates on 14 April, yesterday. Russia has currently five confirmed operational strategic groups in Ukraine, and here they are. One is Center, T-S, Center, Yug, which means South, Zapad, which means West, Vostok, which means East, and Dnieper, which is named after the Dnieper River in Ukraine. Now they got a new one called Sever, meaning North in Russian. The Kiev Post is unable to verify the existence of this new Sever operational strategic group. However, Ukrainian outlet Information Resistance said the group, Sever Group, was formed based on military units from the Kursk and Belgorod regions bordering Ukraine, and that two military units have been transferred to the new group. And here they are, the 11th Army Corps, without the separate motorized rifle regiment, and the 138th separate motorized rifle brigade from the 6th Combined Army. So they've got a corps, and they've added a motorized rifle brigade. So a corps is basically, what, two or three divisions. Anyway, that's what the U.S. calls a corps. I don't know what the Russians call a corps. Moving on. The outlet also reported the new group's capabilities has followed up to 48,000 personnel, 350 to 360 tanks, 860 armored fighting vehicles, 940 to 950 artillery systems, including 100-millimeter howitzers and 120-millimeter mortars, between 110 and 120 units of MLRS, and 4 to 6 launchers of Operational Tactical Missile Complex. The outlet said the new group is under the command of Colonel General Alexander Lapin, Chief of Staff of the Russian Ground Forces since January 23. So if a division is 15,000 people, 10 to 15,000 people, we're just one over the world math here, and three divisions, which is about a corps, three or four. Say if you have a division that's, say, 12,000 people times three is 36, times four, that's 48. So that's about a corps size element. So the 11th Army Corps with the 138th separate motorized rifle brigade is what this new unit is, plus some other stuff, I'm sure. Anyway, moving on. Germany to send additional Patriot systems to Ukraine, 15 April Defense Post. Germany said Saturday, a couple days ago, it will send an additional Patriot air defense system to Ukraine to bolster its hard-pressed military and help it fend off increased Russian aerial attacks. This will be the third Patriot system that Berlin has provided to Kiev. Chancellor Olaf Scholz spoke by phone with President Volodymyr Zelensky on Saturday, reaffirming his, quote, unwavering solidarity with Ukraine in the face of massive and ongoing air strikes. The announcement came as Kiev struggles on the battlefield against Moscow's forces. We just talked about that. Russia has been stepping up aerial attacks on Ukraine. On Thursday, Moscow pounded the country's energy facilities, destroying a power station in the Kiev region. The defense ministry said the handover for the new Patriot system from German military stocks will begin immediately. And what do I got left? Just two more stories and we're done. A lot of information packed in this episode, right? This is like 10 stories and so far we're only 20 minutes. These are good stories, both domestic stories. Missile Defense Agency, of course, United States Missile Defense Agency story here. Lockheed Martin wins a competition to build the next generation interceptor. Michael Morrow, Breaking Defense, 15 April today. The Missile Defense Agency selected Lockheed Martin to help develop a new interceptor to defend American homeland against intercontinental ballistic missiles, beating competitor Northrop Grumman, according to an MDA, Missile Defense Agency announcement. So it was between Lockheed and Northrop Grumman, the usual suspects. And Lockheed wins this one. The next generation interceptor, that's what it's called, win by Lockheed Martin means the defense giant will continue as a sole contractor on the program through flight testing, which the MDA expects will lead to a follow-on production and emplacement contract, enable the program to meet a deadline for IOC, which is initial operational capability in fourth quarter of FY28, which is 4 years from now. Missile Defense Agency spokesman said Lockheed Martin's selection is not a new award and that the aerospace giant will continue to use funds provided by a 2021 contract. The MDA was previously expected to pick a winning contractor for NGI next year after both teams completed a critical design review of their respective offerings, but agency officials told lawmakers on Friday they accelerated their plans due to a combination of budget constraints and confidence in current data to make an informed selection. Reuters first reported MDA's pick of Lockheed to proceed. So there you go. Lockheed will build the next interceptor against intercontinental ballistic missiles. Also, there is a glide phase interceptor to defeat hypersonic missiles. This is the second effort, and here's a little bit of part two of this article. The NGI program plans to replace the current ground-based mid-course defense interceptor, which are tailored to threats from ballistic missiles launched by actors such as North Korea or Iran. The Missile Defense Agency plans to accelerate its hypersonic missile killer design, revealed during the same congressional hearing on Friday. This is an effort called the Glide Face Interceptor. It's down to two teams. One is RTX, and the other is Northrop Grumman. So RTX used to be Raytheon. Missile Defense Agency expects to pick a winner by the end of FY24. Lockheed was eliminated from this the glide phase interceptor competition in 2022. So this is to defeat hypersonic missiles. So it's between RTX or Raytheon and Northrop Grumman. So with Northrop Grumman's, they're still in something. Last story, short story. This is about the multi-domain task force and, of course, the Typhon missile, which is the mid-range capability launch development Typhon SM-6 Tomahawk. We talk about this all the time. They're fielding it. So out of the INF, which is Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, which is dead, deploys a Typhon missile to the Philippines. Ashley Roque, 15 April, Breaking Defense. Soldiers with the U.S. Army's first multi-domain task force, of course, they're out of Fort Lewis, Washington, or Joint Base Lewis-McChord, whatever they call it. They deployed to the Philippines with a new long-range weapon exceeding previously adhered to intermediate range nuclear forces treaty constraints. Shall we talk about that? Let's talk about that first. Under this thing called the INF, the United States agreed not to develop and field ground launch ballistic and cruise missiles with ranges between 500K and 5,500K. But in 2019, then-President Donald Trump announced the United States was exiting the agreement. The United States exited the agreement for various reasons. Some said the Russians were violating it, so we might as well violate it too. Whatever it is, we're not in it anymore. And now you get these long-range missiles that the Army is developing. This decision opened the door for the Army to move out on the mid-range capability launch development known as the Typhon. This land-based system is designed to launch Raytheon's existing SM-6 missiles and Tomahawk cruise missiles. And the idea is this mid-range is to hit between the precision strike missile, which is 300 miles or 500K, and 1,725 miles or 22,776 kilometers of the long-range hypersonic weapon ground-based. So that's why they call it mid-range, because you got the precision strike missile, on one end and the long-range hypersonic weapon on the other end. And right in the middle, you got this system called the mid-range capability that fires two missiles, SM-6 and Tomahawk. Anyway, they're deploying it to the Philippines, the Army. U.S. Army Pacific Commander Charles Flynn told reporters last year the new launcher would be bound for the Indo-Pacific region, but did not disclose where or if the United States has struck a deal with a foreign government to rest it on its soil. Part of this exercise called Salaknib 2024, soldiers arrive in the Philippines with the new weapon. For whatever that means. I don't know if they're going to fire it or test it or what. Are they going to leave it there or what? But anyway, they've deployed with it for better or for worse. Probably for better. And that's it. Am I done? Let's see. Yeah, that's the last story. 25 minutes. A lot of action and information packed in 25 minutes. And I think this is episode 257. I can never remember it. I even wrote it down. I can't find it. But anyway, 257 is in the books. Thank you very much for listening and good night.